is after them, but it's Fahin who's barely clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Fahin maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh. Fahin's a champion. Artie Forrest.
Hello, welcome to week 6 of the Cheltenham Countdown, as brought to you by the From the Horse's Mouth. Again, I am joined by Ruby Walsh and Rory DeLargy as we look at the big 4 races, the Champion Hurdle all the way through to the Gold Cup, the Paddy Power Stayers, and the small matter of the Champion Chase as well. Really looking forward to getting stuck into that. Before I do, a reminder, if you listen to this as a podcast, fantastic. If you want to watch it, it's available on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel, which you can subscribe to, you can like, and of course you can comment to get a question to the lads, which this week, well done, Billy Abbey. AB or Abbey, I'm sorry, but Billy anyway asked the question to Ruby. Ruby, what horse gave you the biggest wow performance of your career, and what was the biggest wow performance by a horse you were riding against?
Oh, that I rode, probably masterminded in the Champion Chase as a 5-year-old to win as far as he did, but to have won as far from home as he had won, that was incredible. And that I rode against a long time ago, probably the first time, and I didn't ride against him too often, but I rode against Istabrak one day in Tipperary, and he passed me middleways down the back straight, and it was like when a truck or a bus passes you on the motorway and you get that speed wobble from the power of a gun by you. He was an incredible horse, Istabrak.
And that was in the back straight, so he...
Yeah, he just went, Charlie Swan went by, I was riding Native Darrick, and he went by me, and I almost got the speed wobble from the whoosh of him going by.
What a horse Istabrak was. Mastermind, 5-year-olds, very rare to run on the championship, isn't it?
Yeah, very rare to run it. Probably that very few winners as 5-year-olds, because very few actually run it. But he wasn't a novice. He'd won over fences in France as a 3-year-old, I think. I rode him in a 4-year-old grade one. In France, he won as a 3-year-old in France on offences. Definitely early as a 4-year-old, so he wasn't a novice, and that's why he ended up in the Champion Chase.
He won a handicap at Sandown.
Did he?
December of Amok in the 130s, I think.
In his first run in Exeter, and he unseated at the third or fourth fence, the ditch past the stands. Sam rode him that day, and then I rode him a handicap, and then he went to the Game of Spirit.
Yep.
And the rest, as I say, is history. Great question, Billy. You've got yourself a free bet. Well done. Let's get cracking. We've got a lot of races to cut through today, the Champion Hurdle being the first one of those. Rory, going to start with you. Obviously, we know the Constitution Hill is going to be a very short price favourite, potentially the shortest of all time. Istabrak, as already mentioned by Ruby, 4-9. Sir Ken, 4-9. When they won their second Champions, the shortest. Is he in that bracket?
Oh, he's definitely in that bracket, yeah. Sir Ken was 2-5.
Was he?
By the way, for his second. For his second Champion Hurdle. 4-9 for his third.
Thanks, Rory. the comments would have been flooding in had you not corrected me there. But thanks for playing the Ruby.
Someone did ask me that a couple of months ago, who was the shortest priced Champion Hurdle favourite ever.
I'm brushing off on him, PK. Picking him up every time he's wrong.
But yeah, I think he's going to be shorter than that. It's just a case, it's him versus State Man is what it looks like in the Champion Hurdle. And in terms of the figures, listen, you have to believe the figures. I think Willie has said the one potential weakness in him is he hasn't done it on good ground. Well, he did it on good ground in the Supreme last year. That was his best performance. And that's one of the just, you know, you've only got to watch the Supreme back to realise what an incredible run that was. So good ground won't be a problem to him. His time figure for winning the Supreme last year, unsurprisingly, given he was beating grade one horses. You get Supremes where, you know, you wonder what's in behind, but last year's Supreme was full of grade one horses and he's absolutely destroyed them in a very, very good time. I think he'll be 3s on.
Yeah, which he is, as we record, he's 1-3.
These favourites tend to tighten up on the day, but, you know, as I've said before, you sometimes get horses who look to have really outstanding claims who you'll get big bucks, evens in the ring, or odds against in the ring for a second and third stairs hurdles. You won't be getting any price like that on Constitution Hill.
Do the first results of the first, the Supreme or the Arkle, and even the Ultimate, can they affect?
Not the Champion Hurdle. Towards the end, if you're talking about the Mayor's Hurdle, obviously running up bets there. We've all been there, haven't we? We don't need to dot the I across the T on that.
I didn't bring it up this time, Ruby.
You get the D there to do.
Or the National Hunt Chase with a warm favourite. Yes, the prices can get a little bit shorter there, but. You know, the question there
is... But the other way, supposing if punters are losing and bookmakers are winning?
Yeah, I think bookmakers on the first day will be pretty bold. You know, as in the ring bookmakers will be pretty bold anyway. And that's probably one scenario where, you know, people will tell you that the exchanges rule in terms of the show prices. But this is one scenario where the bookmakers will actually boss the exchanges. will they? I think it doesn't really matter what happens in the first couple of races. I think bookmakers will still be bold on the champion. They might be, if they've had a series of bad results, they might not be so bold come the end of the day. Mm. But it depends, you know, different bookmakers will have different views on that. You know, there'll be, some of them will have a punter's mentality, try to smash their way out of trouble by laying favourites even more heavily towards the end of the day. That's not a good idea if you want to be in the ring for a long time, but some will take that kind of view. But whether they've got the cash to back it up is another matter altogether. Whereas some bookmakers will think, right, the results have gone for us, we can afford to take a few chances, get some money on the hod. The worst case scenario is we come out marginally ahead on the day. So that's a possibility. But yeah, you know, the market will be really, really strong for the first three races particularly.
Usually is, yeah. Outside of him falling or something terrible happening, where can he get beaten? How can he get beaten?
Well, there have been inexplicable results in sport and in horse racing, through history. Some defeats that are almost impossible to explain. Horses who looked unbeatable, you know, suddenly not showing up on a big day for no apparent reason. So, you know, there's that just inexplicable defeat coming up. Can any horse get him, you know, on his head? I don't think so. I don't think anyone can really get him in trouble in terms of his cruising speed either. So it's just a case if it turns really tactical and ends up being a slowly run race, that's probably where you get more chance of a false result. But there will be a small field, and you know, whereas unlike last year's Supreme, there's not guaranteed pace. As we saw in the Fighting Fifth, though, there's no pace. He just makes it himself. So yeah, he, you know, in that respect, he looks fairly flawless at this stage, so it's very, very hard to see him getting beaten. There are plenty of top-class horses who are reliant on one thing in terms of how a race is run, and we tend to ignore that when we look at their brilliance. But with Constitution Hill, we haven't seen that so far. It may creep in at some stage, you know, because he's not he's not fully tested in terms of what quirks he might have, but there seem to be none at the moment. And again, the amazing thing about him, as Nicky Henderson keeps saying, is that you've got no idea how good he is until you open him up. You know, he doesn't get above himself at home. He doesn't push himself too hard in his work. He just is a bit of a phenomenon. So yeah, it's great to have a horse like that, and long may it last, I think.
Yeah, it's fantastic. All right, Ruby, let's put you into the Paul Townend bracket, or sitting there looking at Nico getting, you know, the white silks on. You sit there, do you think, how do I beat this horse? Or do you go, how do I maximise my horse's potential of winning this race? Is it, you know, it's two potentially different things.
You look at it both ways, PK. And as Rory has alluded to, a lot will depend on how the race is run. So the biggest strength that Constitution Hill probably has in terms of not getting him beaten is Nico. Nico de Bonneville is incredibly good at keeping things unbelievably simple. He doesn't ever overcomplicate a ride. We watched him on Shishkin last Saturday. Would he stay? Wouldn't he stay? Nico de Bonneville rode him like there was absolutely no doubt, and just rode him as if he was dead normal. And that's what Nico does time and time again. He will sit just behind the pace. Oh, no matter how fast they go, Nico will be right behind the pace. If they go slow, he'll sit on the pace, gets up sides, 3 furlongs down, be that the second last or the third last. He'll send Constitution off the Constitution Hill on, off the bend, regardless of whether he's in front or whatever he's doing. Nico just keeps things unbelievably simple. And, you know, that's when you're looking at it, when Paul Townley will be looking at it, well, what do I do? If you jump out and go, Nico's going to sit on your tail. If you stand below the start and don't go, Nico will just be gone. He just keeps it so simple. So Paul probably has to go out thinking, well, if I get in front, can I slow it down enough that maybe I might outsprint Constitution Hill? But I can't see Nico de Bonneville allow him to do that. If Paul goes slow, Nico will join him at the top of the hill. Nico just keeps things dead simple. He's riding the best horse, and that's the way he rides them.
Sounds like there's not a huge amount you can do, really.
No, I don't think there is. There's not that there's mind games, but Nico's not a hold-up jockey that you're thinking, right, if I go steady, he's going to want to follow me and pounce at the last. Nico de Bonneville doesn't ride that way. Nico will get upside you down to the second last and be gone off the bend, because in his eyes, my horse is either good enough or isn't.
Okay, right. Well, let's talk about the William Mullins horses then. You mentioned State Man. He looks clearly the best hurdler in the William Mullins yard at this stage. Vauban's had a couple of cracks at him, no joy yet. So Willie afterwards in the DRF said, oh, we've got some horse of Nicky Henderson's to beat at Cheltenham. I'm sure we'll see how we go. And you mentioned maybe the quick ground, but clutching a little bit?
Yeah, but like, Nicky was the same, and Willie had monkfish. And what did Nicky call him? Fish cake.
Fish cake.
So Willie just called him some horse. Yeah, look, Stateman has been rock solid. He has done so little wrong since joining Willie Mullins as he fell at Leopardstown. That's his only blip. Look, he got a lead in the Morgiana. He got a lead at Christmas. He made the running in the Irish Champion Hurdle. Again, he's versatile as to what way you can ride him. But all the figures tell you he has quite a bit to find to beat Constitution Hill. But look, the race needs an opposition. It is Stateman. Will he be good enough? Who knows? It doesn't look like he will. Mm. But that doesn't mean you can't try.
It's always, we're loath to go cross-generational, but do you have any idea where Stateman is versus the likes of Hurricane Fly and those other top-class hurdlers that are in the yard? Is he?
No, you can't. You can't, because you're going on memory as such. How did that fella work? There's no timing mechanism in Willie, so you can't say, well, Stateman is clocking the same times at home as Hurricane Fly. He's not, because there's no, as I said, there's no timing mechanism. You know what I mean? Stateman works with good horses and works the best horse always, without being fully extended at home, because no horses are. You have to keep something for the race course. But look, Stateman does everything right. He's improved with every run jumping this season, but he has to probably improve again. Look, Constitution Hill just looks different, and you know, he's the horse of his generation, and for racing, yeah, it'd be great if he is different. Frankel was different. Constitution Hill looks to be different. To me, Colorado Star was always different. You know, Hurricane Fly was too. I mean, Hurricane Fly's record, what did he win? 23, 22 grade ones? He was just different, and Constitution Hill looks to be the same.
Hopefully he'll win the same amount. Quick word on Vauban. I thought he'd get closer to Stateman at DRF, but a little bit disappointed, because we're expecting him to gradually improve. We mentioned the five-year-olds, tough for them.
Yeah, but McGrory put a figure on it for you a couple of weeks back as to what juveniles have to improve to get up to open horses, and Vauban is improving. Whether he'll improve quick enough or not, only time will tell, but for me at the moment he looks booked for third.
You're 1-2-3 in the Champion Hurdle, Ruby. Off you go.
Constitution Hill, Stateman, Vauban.
Easy peasy, as the market has it. Rory?
Yeah, I'll throw a bit of an outsider in there. I'll go Constitution Hill, Stateman and First Street, who'll be a big prize now after getting stuffed at the weekend. But that Wayne Canton race is... The Kingmill is just a strange race. It's all about speed. You're racing at a very tight track at less than 2 miles. He was held up. You can't be held. You've got to be on the go from the start at Wayne Canton. You can't give anything away at the start. He'll be happier back at Cheltenham. He's got solid form this season. Otherwise, I can see him being ridden to get a place. He'll be held up. He'll be coming through horses at the end. I think he could be the one at a big price to finish third.
Yeah, well.
Or even second if Stateman really has a go at Constitution Hill and gets, you know, ends up running his race upside down.
I'm conscious of time, but Ruby, to go back to that, if you are Paul Ten and you're riding to win the race, but can that harm potentially someone who's looking in a bet without for Stateman? He's heavy odds on. Could he be broken by Constitution Hill?
Oh, of course he could, but it depends then where, when Paul presses the button. Could I see, if Constitution Hill makes the run, can I see Paul Townend take a Nico de Bonneville on at the top of the hill? No. He'll follow him down and try to pull out to have a go going to the last. So, no, I wouldn't think so. I think they'll be first and second.
Yeah, and you don't ride for, or do you? Can maybe someone's on 33-1 shot or 12-1 shot, like I like to move it, Sam. Can they ride for second?
Plenty of people gave Theatre World a good ride, or Tommy Tracy in particular, to be second this to back a couple of occasions. You can ride, and actually, under the rules of the sport, in theory, that is the way you're supposed to ride every horse.
Yes, you're right to attain your best
possible position, finishing position. So if you go out and you think, well, the best finishing position I can achieve is third, that's the way, actually, the way the rules of racing are written.
Okay.
It's a big contradiction. Or, in fairness,
strictly speaking, you've got to look at how the race pans out, and your decision is, I'm not chasing this crazy pace because I'll stop. Therefore, I'm gonna wait and let my horse come with a run later on and see where we can finish, rather than going, I can only finish third, so that's all I'm trying for. That's strictly against the rules. Mm. But riding the race so that your horse is able to see it out and finish as well as he can is essentially what
Which
you should be doing.
Which often means horses finish closer than they actually should.
Yeah.
Okay, right, there you go. If you're playing in the betting without market, you could look potentially at something at a big price to be ridden to stay on the closing stages. Going to take the quickest of breaks. We'll be back with the Champion Chase and another question from you, the listeners.
Betting can add a little excitement to any sporting event,
but only if it's done safely, responsibly and within our means.
Never gamble when angry or feeling low.
Set yourself a limit for time, money or both.
No matter what the problem is, gambling is never.
Is never.
Never the answer.
There's always someone to talk to when you feel gambling is becoming a stress.
Check out responsiblegaming.paddypower.com.
Welcome back. Right, we're going to move on to the champion chase. Before we do, a question from Matthew. This one for Rory and Ruby. Is there a horse at the festival that's had its last run over fences that you think is a player over hurdles or vice versa? Something like Auchan Risk in the Grand Annual. That's from Matthew. Rory?
Well, something like Auchan Risk in the Grand Annual would be the obvious answer to that. He won the Betfair Hurdle in record time, and he'd been novice chasing prior to that, and Chris Gordon said he'd be going for the Grand Annual next, so he's the blindingly obvious answer. There aren't that many horses who mix hurdling and chasing, you know, deliberately as dual-purpose performers, if you like, these days. So he's a rarity in that regard. And generally speaking, when horses are switched between hurdles and fences, you've either a horse who's being aimed at one of the big chasers who might have had a spin over hurdles. That's more of a Grand National thing than a Grade One over hurdles or Grade One over fences. Or you get a horse who hasn't quite panned out as a chaser and has been switched back to hurdles, maybe for the pretemps or something like that. But that tends to be a change of plan rather than a cunning
ploy or a
way
like
of preparing your horses. Yeah. So I think the question has been answered
by the question. Yeah. Rory, Ruby?
I agree with Matthew. You picked him yourself, Matthew. Yeah, well, not.
That's on to Matthew. Okay, let's move on to the champion chase. Ruby, we've already mentioned Masterminded. Was he probably the most satisfying of the champion chase pictures
probably
yet?
Probably biggest thrill on your PK to ride a horse that could win a champion chase that far. But as regards satisfying, probably as early up the first year he won.
Why is that?
It was the first champion chase I won. He'd been beaten in the Tingle Creek by Moscow Express. He came up just short in the old Victor Chandler.
Moscow Flyer.
Moscow Flyer.
Moscow Express, yeah. I don't think would have run over 2 miles now, Ruby.
He did. Would have needed won a couple 2 mile chases.
I would have needed three now, mainly.
He did win.
He definitely didn't win the Tingle Creek, Ruby.
No,
was.
He didn't. And he was second in the Victor Chandler to Izio. Give him a lot of weight.
Yeah, but then it was a handicap, yeah.
And then went and won the champion chase. So satisfaction-wise, that one probably.
Okay, Zerti up from Ruby. Rory, Edward Stone, where do we stand on him? Obviously, looked like he'd made the transition from novice to open company brilliantly, but there are now a couple of question marks.
No, I don't think there are.
No?
No, I mean, obviously, he unseated his rider at Kempton. That ditch seemed to cash out a few horses at Kempton over the Christmas period for some reason. He's looked almost flawless over fences, aside from that he's brought down on his debut. But his jumping has been very, very good. That was his only semblance of mistake in his last few races. And given it seemed to be catching horses out for some reason, I'm inclined to forgive him that. It just seemed a complete,
anomaly.
Yeah, it wasn't just a case of him getting in too close, or it just seemed to be a bit of a brainstorm on his part at the time. And he was then fine at Cheltenham next time out. Now, he was beaten in the rearranged Clarence House chase, but you can't really blame horse or jockey for that. I thought Tom Cannon wanted to make sure that he had an argument in his sights through that race, and as a result, they've ended up giving Editor de Gite quite an easy lead. Even then, Editor de Gite needed a perfect ride to win that race. You know, he's managed to kick on from the home bend, got about 6 or 7 lengths on the pursuers, and then is all out to hold on. Edward Stone's managed to get to him, and you would have thought that in getting to
he
would have got by, but Niall Houlihan's managed to keep a little bit up his sleeve to win that. And I thought, that's been suggested as ride of the season. I've got no problem with that. I thought it was an absolutely superb ride.
Brilliant ride, yeah.
Do you know how many winners Niall Houlihan's had over fences this season?
It's going to be low.
Total under two.
Two. Wow.
Editor de Gide twice.
Yeah, and he might have had one since I looked about a week ago. He might have, a week or 10 days ago. And I thought, because I was writing up a horse that he was riding over fences, I thought, he's been really impressive with fences this season. I thought, I'll just check the stats in case someone goes. Two winners, and both been brilliant rides from the front on Editor de Gide. Mm. So it's absolutely bizarre that's the scenario with Niall at the moment. But he's been riding really well. But anyway, that was the perfect ride. Tom Cannon, yeah, if he realised that Editor de Gide was a horse to beat on the day, he'd have ridden slightly differently. But you can't really blame him for that. He was up against the champion chase favourite. He didn't ride his horse from miles off the pace. He rode it sensibly. And it was just the fact that both of those horses were kind of looking at each other, that Houlihan had the chance of just stealing that 3 or 4 lengths that were crucial. And he's done it perfectly. So I've got no problem with that. I thought Edward Stone probably enhanced his chances of winning the championship.
Interesting. Well, the market didn't agree with you originally anyway. Ruby, talk to us about Energumene. Again, are there question marks about him now?
Yeah, probably. Obviously jumped a bit higher the first and made a mistake at the last. And yeah, Rory's summarised it perfectly. Niall Houlihan away from the third last fence with a lead started to quicken, and he made Energumene and Edward Stone chase him as he was quickening. So they had to run a race to get to him, and then he fought back to win. But yeah, there probably is question marks for Energumene. That was on the new course. He'll go back to the old course where he won last year. But I think it'll be a fascinating race tactically. You know you're going to have Editor de Geet jump out to go. It's what does Tom Cannon do? What does Paul Townend do? It'll be a much different race. I could see Tom Cannon going back to riding Edward Stone like he rode him in last year's Arkle, rather than the way he's ridden him twice this year. He dropped him in the Tingle Creek, he dropped him in the Clarence House, but he rode him third, fourth, just behind the pace in last year's Arkle. And I could see him reverting to those tactics, which will mean Energumene could be behind him. And it'll be interesting, but I'd agree. I thought he was the one that came out of Cheltenham at the end of January, when his reputation enhanced, was definitely Edward Stone.
Got a very efficient ride, obviously, Editor de Geet, as you mentioned. If the three of them get perfectly 100% efficient rides, I guess, you feel the result is definitely different compared to what we saw in the Clarence.
I think with different course as well, and I think it will be. I think you can see, I could see Edward Stone being the one bridging the gap between Editor de Geet and Energumene next time round.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. What do you think, Rory?
I think so. I mean, it depends on ground conditions as well, of course, because, you know, Alan King's got on record this season saying he doesn't want to run on Edward Stone on quickish ground, and he's avoided good and good at soft ground twice early in the season. I guess part of that is the time of the season as well. When a trainer says, I don't want to run on that ground, they don't mean I never want to run on that ground. They mean, given I'm building this horse up for this race, I don't want to be taking any chances. And I think that's absolutely fine when you take it in the wider context. And Kingy's got an awful lot of flack for his campaigning of a couple of horses, where I think he's done absolutely the right thing by them.
Fitter to get, the lighter to get,
yes,
the easier it is too to cope with drier ground. So I could see Edward Stone obviously coping with drier ground in the spring, whereas he mightn't early in the winter when he's carrying a bit more condition. And also, you'd have Gentleman to Me in the race, so I think it'll change the shape of the Champion Chase compared to the Clarence House. And Gentleman to Me will push Edwards or Editor de Geet.
Yeah.
It won't be as easy for Niall Houlihan to control and dictate when he wants to quicken the race.
Do you think Energumene will be ridden the same way as he was last year?
I'd say there's a strong possibility. I think when you look at the race, I mean, you'll have Editor de Geet and Gentleman to Me going forward. I think that they will do things differently with Edward Stone. If you're Paul Townend looking at it, you're thinking, whoa, that's all going to happen in front of me.
Yes.
So, Gentleman to Me, does he have a chance? I know he's come right back into the picture. Is that a one-off to DRF?
He definitely has a chance. I thought Danny gave him a terrific ride at the Dublin Racing Festival. He jumped brilliantly for him, seemed to bounce back. You know, he looked flat when you look back at his Christmas run now, after having the run in Ace, then the Tingle Creek, the Christmas just come too soon for him. But he looked a much fresher and more exuberant horse at the Dublin Racing Festival. And then you have Blue Lord. He didn't travel at the DRF like he did at Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. The pair of them are kind of anomalies there. On one run, each of them looked like a Champion Chase contender, but on a couple of other runs, you're shrugging your shoulders a bit with him.
You're guessing with the two of them. Be interesting. I don't know, will Blue Lord step up in Tripper? Will he stay at the Champion Chase? I don't know the answer to that. But I think from a race that had such a short price favourite prior to Christmas, I think now it's fascinating.
It looks really interesting.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's fascinating. We've talked about the main contenders. Nube Negro, we've kind of forgotten about because he hasn't run in a while.
He's not good enough.
I don't think he's quite good enough. I mean, he's good enough to finish on the heels of them.
OK, lads, winner. Yeah, fascinating race, Ruby. Nail your colours to the mast, please.
It's not like me, but I think I'm going to have to go against WP here and go with Edward Stone.
Edward Stone for Ruby Walsh? Rory?
Yeah, Edward Stone for me as well, yeah.
Lovely.
I've committed that to print already, so... Listen, yeah, Edward Stone is one of those... He looks like the horse who's most likely to have the race run to suit and most likely to give his running. There are two or three others who are a little bit more mercurial, who, if they bring their A game, could beat him. But the question is whether that's going to happen, and I think he's the most solid, and the price is commensurate with that.
Yeah, okay. Two votes for Constitution Hill, two votes for Edward Stone. We rattle through the championship races onto the Paddy Power-sponsored Stayers Hurdle next. And a question first before to Rory. Rory, Matt Taylor, wants to dig into your anti-post portfolio. Mm-hmm. He'd like to know what is looking to be your best anti-post bet for this year's Cheltenham Festival. And he's also asked, could you include the odds, please?
Well, I gave my anti-post portfolio on this show a couple of weeks ago, I think, because there was so little in it. I backed two. I can't think what the second one was.
That would suggest that it's not looking likely to win if you can't remember the second one.
I remember thinking at the time that it might have been Shishkin for the Ryanair.
Oh, well, that's looking okay now.
I mentioned him. I thought if he was beaten at Ascot, I thought he'd be more interesting coming back to Cheltenham. But I can't remember if it was him or not. And the other one was Saint Donat in the triumph at 12.
Saint Donat,
yes, Saint Donat, good Welsh horse. I backed him at 12 for the triumph. Hopefully he'll be turning up, but it is non-runner money back.
Yeah.
At 12, I just thought if he does turn up, he's not a 12-1 shot.
Could have two French winners. We'll talk about one French horse shortly. If you want to be in with a chance of winning a free 50 quid bet, do leave a comment in the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel and we'll pick one up each week. What else do they need to do, Ruby, on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel?
Hang on now.
Come on, you'll get this.
Comment.
Oh, God, I just said comment.
Before subscribe.
That, there you go. You nailed it. And like it.
Paddy
Power Stayers Hurdle.
You'll subscribe and you'll like it.
This race has a habit of throwing up multiple winners, Rory. What is it about this race that does that?
I have no idea, really. Mm. It's just one of those... It can be a pretty punishing race at times. It's not always. You would have thought, given how open it tends to be, or has been in recent times, that it'd be quite hard to do that. You look at the Gold Cup, where you tend to deal with... you know, it tends to produce outstanding horses. You would expect to get more multiple winners of the Gold Cup. And of course you have in the last decade or so, but for a long time, a dual or multiple Gold Cup winner was like gold dust. So I don't really know why the Stairs Hurdle has produced...
Do you, Ruby?
So many. I mean, they've all been classier than the average. Mm. But
is it the feeding system into it? If you look at... Albert Bartlett, Ballymore winners, they tend to go chasing rather than stay to be the winners, rather than stay to be stayers, hurdle horses from the start of the season. Yeah. It's so tricky. So you're dealing with the horses then maybe they were placed in either race that haven't the size or scope to go chasing, or some that don't take to chasing. The obvious exception was probably Blazing Cal, who didn't get to run as a novice hurdler last year. And he's come back as your favourite this year. He could well have been a winning novice hurdler last year, but for injury. So it tends to just kind of go that way, doesn't it?
And you get the impression of Blazing Cal turned up and won the Alpha Bartlett last year. He probably would be over fences this season.
You do. That's just, you know...
He's over hurdles because they haven't had the opportunity to have a whole season over fences. So it's easier to do the hurdles route. Big Bucks, who absolutely dominated it. He
spent a full season novice chasing.
It all came good for him at the entry.
Was the handicap in the January meeting, or was it?
Yeah, it was New Year's Day.
Yeah, New Year's Day.
Because he fell at the last, or unseated at the last, in the Hennessy.
Yeah.
And then he won a handicap on New Year's Day, and then he won the Cleve Hurdle at the end of January.
And the rest.
There tend to be slightly odd routes.
Won at Chase in Newbury one day, PK. Over 2 miles and 2 furlongs.
who did?
Big Bucks.
Oh, great, thanks for that. Thanks for the update. Was Moscow Express running in the race, was he?
I'm racking my brain here. He won the... I think we sponsored the race now, in Nace. 2 mile chase in Nace. I think he beat Knife Edge in that.
Very good. Let's go back to the Paddy Power sponsors there. Another race sponsor. Blazing Cal, I assume you think he deserves to be favourite, Ruby, or am I wrong? Does he deserve
it? Good performance in Navin, there's no doubt about that. When he beat Meet and Greet, first run for... over 12 months, 14 months almost, and it was the manner in which he did it. He was very stylish performance. Does the actual form of that mean he could win the Stairs Hurdle? I'm not so sure, but you'd have to be really impressed with the way he did it and how he did it. But then you're thinking, ooh, one run after 14 months, coming on the 12th of February, month out from Cheltenham, is he going to be as good? Can he improve? It's just the imponderables for training a racehorse. So,
talk to us about the bounce factor. What is it? Sum it up.
I suppose it's recovery. No one seems to know, and that's why he's still called the bounce, isn't it? Mm. Is it the recovery? So you look at a horse you haven't run in 14 months, and a trainer has to decide, well, does he need 2 days off? Do I give him a third day off? Do I go back training him? It's trying to gauge the recovery, simply because he can't tell you how he's feeling, how much energy he has. So you're waiting for the signs. You're waiting for him to look like he did before the race. You're waiting for him to buck and be eating every nut you give him. That some horses might take them longer than others, and you're trying to gauge where the horse is and how the horse is recovering from his previous run. So, look, that's the art of training racehorses. That's why it's not a science. And, look, that's what Charles Burns will have to gauge. And then you think, right, to build him back to where he was, how much work do I need to give him? So you'll monitor things like his weight and how much he's eating and his form and his general well-being. But when you pick a race or pick a date, as Paul Nicholls always said, he could find it easier to pick one day, one date, and work back from there to have his horse spot on. When you're trying to win, let them down, build them up again, that's when it becomes more difficult.
The bounce factor for Blazing Cal. Very interesting to see how he goes. Tio Poo, he was favourite, of course, after the Galmoy, but then Blazing Cal did what he did, but still a chance. Does he need it soft, though?
There is that argument. Well, you're taking that from connections. They've always said he's a better horse with a cut in the ground, and his form would suggest that. He beat Classical Dream and Honeysuckle in the Hatton's Grace. He absolutely bolted up in a race. He was entitled to bolt up in Goran Park in the Galmoy. What did he do there? He showed us he gets 3 miles. Yeah. So that's what we wanted to see. But ground, if you're listening to connections, they've always said he wanted soft ground. Now we're going to find out. Now, you say a horse, every horse will go on at once. Some do. They don't all go on at once. But he's a very good horse, too.
Yeah. Home by the Lee, nobody's talking about. I don't know what it is about this.
He's for me.
Oh, okay,
right. He's the one I like. I've been impressed with him this year. He ran down Bob Olinger at Navan and won by 2 lengths. I was impressed with him at Christmas when he beat Ashdale Bob. I think that was a strong race, and he was going to win from a long way out. I know he got a brilliant ride in Navan to win from JJS Levin, but I think he's the one. He's an 8-year-old. He's a bit of strength about him now. He was disappointed in the race last year, but I think they were riding him a little bit differently.
He's definitely a better horse this year, isn't he?
Yeah, and they're riding him with more room, more light. JJ's keen to stay wide on him, and it seems to be suiting him better.
The Javier in the notes said he can't struggle in the early stages of race, or it looks like he is. When you think of Ingus Dreaver, Big Bucks used to have the flat spot, Paisley Park has a flat spot. Is that actually a positive that these horses need to be roused along early or in this race?
Well, those horses tended to travel well and then just race behind the bridle a little bit, so you had to wake them up. Whereas he needs to be woken up a little bit early in a race, doesn't he?
That's it.
Generally speaking, whereas that's a slightly different thing. And you wonder, track position is reasonably important. So the key with him is that he's in a good position after jumping a couple of hurdles and then see if he can get into the race from there. Whereas, you know, with all the others you mentioned, you could put them where you want and then you just had to know that they weren't going to quicken when you clicked your fingers. You had to then work on them
just
a little bit.
Start winding them up. A bit like Dino's Beano, I suppose. And maybe that's why riding Home by the Lee...
a lot of winding up before the race.
Yeah, everywhere. But even you watch JJ riding Home by the Lee, maybe that's why he's riding him for light. I think the best way of putting it is he's like a diesel, but with no turbo. And if you ride them in and every time you get stopped, it just takes you so long to get those horses going. Yeah. So when you ride them wide with light and you can wind them up for the first 3 furlongs, once you've got daylight to run into, you can actually wind them up. But every time you get cut off or stopped, gaps close too quickly for those horses. And every time you get stopped, it's back to zero to start again. So that's why riding him in a bit of room seems to be working.
So he's expensive to run then if he's like a diesel. You want to get an electric car now at this stage. Last year's winner, Florian Porter. We're not really talking about
The other side of that coin is the diesel cars probably keep going a lot longer than the electric ones.
Right.
And that's what's required to win the stairs.
Okay. Well, the Green Party would be in touch with you, really, for that comment. Florian Porter. Last year's winner. Does he have to lead?
He doesn't have to, but the thing about Florian Porter is that he's a very fast horse for a staying hurdler. So there aren't many of these who could take him on and get past him in the early stages. He's just got a bit of natural zip about him. And he's not one of those. There are a lot of horses who would like to lead, but actually, you know, again, as Ruby's saying, you want to just get them up to top speed reasonably early and just keep them going. He's not like that. He's a front runner who can slow it, who can quicken it. His issue is the slightly wonky steering, you know. The steering column's the issue with Florian Porter. But yeah, he can be brilliant. So there is this idea that, well, you know, he's got his own way last year. All we need to do is stop him doing that and then we get him beaten. Well, you try stopping him doing that. There aren't many 3-mile hurdlers who can do that and not many scenarios where in spoiling Florian Porter's chance, you're not going to spoil your chance more. I think that's the issue with him. Of course, the issue with him now is is how ready he is for this, given the setback that he's had. But Gavin Cromwell's talking a good game at the moment and seems to think that he's got him where he wants him. I think that's never easy to read, because you always have to think you're getting there, don't you?
Yeah.
Even if it's very, very close to the wire. So if he's not 100%, then that's going to make it difficult for him. But he's always a dangerous horse to take on around Cheltenham, because the track suits, and we keep talking about Cheltenham as being a really stiff track. It's not really.
Depends
most of the way around. You know, it's stiff in certain conditions. It's stiff when races are run in a certain way. When it gets soft, you know, it's hard to get home. But for large chunks of the race, you've got to have speed more than stamina to hold your position and being in the right place. And that's something that he does that, you know, plenty of other staying hurdlers struggle with. So
That's part of riding the undulations as well, though.
Yeah.
It's where you make ground, where you can get a bit closer, where you have to sit and suffer. That's riding undulations. That's where you have to be able to use the track to your advantage as such. And definitely the undulations suit Florian Porter. Yeah. So when he runs around by the stands and gets a bit keen, he's running downhill as he's picking up. Then Danny sat on him on the level and steadied him both years on the climb. Yep. But everybody wants to steady on the climb, because nobody can push up the hill. If you push up the hill, you've got nothing left. Well, you freewheel back down, but you're goosed at the back of the second last hurdle. So the undulation suit him, whereas at Aintree, when you go
Aintree, you would think, well, a horse with his speed should do better at Aintree. It doesn't suit him because it's dead flat.
There was nowhere to slow him down. Danny had no natural... The incline naturally slowed Florian Porter at Cheltenham. There was nothing to slow him down at Aintree, and he just kept going and kept running and ran himself into the ground.
If you didn't know anything about the horse or the race going into it, was there a part of Cheltenham that you thought, this is the best place to make ground in a stayers hurdle, i.e. coming down the hill or back?
Same in every track, PK. You shouldn't accelerate down the hill, even though it's cheap lengths. You don't slow, but if you accelerate, you're burning running down. If you kick down into the dip in Galway, you'll fly down, hit the bottom, and you'll get a quarter of the way up and then, you know, run out of juice. Same in Cheltenham, same in Tramore, Clonmel, Exeter. All undulating tracks are the same. You can't make ground climbing. You have to make ground on the levels. And then you freewheel on the downhill. You make on the levels and you sit on the climbs.
There are so few level parts of Cheltenham, right? I mean, maybe when you enter the back straight.
Yeah, well, after you get down past the first hurdle, when you get by the first hurdle past the water jump.
Yeah.
From the water jump to the ditch. It's flat along there.
Okay, so watch for a move there.
But of course, the other thing is that's rarely in your gift to do that. You know what you want to do.
Yeah, but everybody else knows that too. Yeah. So you're trying to pass the guy inside you, and he's trying to get closer as well. So
if you don't have the horse under you to do that, then you know you might want to do it, but it can't be done.
What you're really hoping for is the lad in third or fourth decides, just as they're climbing to the fourth last, that he wants to get closer. So then he pushes forward. The guys in front can't let them by, so they have to go as well. Yeah. So you want them all to push forward while you're just watching them getting empty onto the top of the hill. And then you come on past them at the back of the second last.
Yeah, when you're riding big books, yeah, definitely. You're still giving nudging and nerdling, though. But yeah, you're like, oh yeah, don't worry, see you later, lads. Talk about a couple others then, lads. Goldtweet, who won obviously on trials day, is going to be supplemented, we hear, the trainer suggests. Rory, his form going into that run at Cheltenham didn't look to be great, on the face of it anyway.
No, and listen, you know, it ties in. If you said Horse X has beaten Dashiell Thrasher with Paisley Park in third, you'd say, well, that's solid. That's solid form. That gives you a chance at least of hitting the frame. But it doesn't really tie into any of the rest of his form. He might just be really well suited to Cheltenham. My gut feeling is that just ended up being the perfect run for him. Almost the fact that they weren't expecting an awful lot on the day meant everyone was really relaxed about it, and the race has panned out perfectly for him. It'd be great to see another French horse
on the year
there, but he's
Barracuda, you know, passed away, it'd be kind of apt, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and also whether he's an out-and-out stayer or not, again, you know, he's obviously won the he's won Cleve over the course and distance, but you know, that he seemed to do that with a turn of foot, whereas ironically Paisley Park travelled really well and then didn't pick up. Dashiell Thrasher doesn't quite stay 3 miles, you know, he's vulnerable from the last there. He's great yardstick, but I just got the impression the Goldtweet just had a little bit of toe there that others didn't have on the day. I'm not sure he's going to come forward from it, but if he does, he's interesting. Yeah. It's just the fact that his trainer, who does know what he's doing, didn't think he was a player. Yeah. Just thought he was dipping his toe in the water, and you know, in a few years' time, he'd hopefully bring something with a better chance. So he might just be one of those who is just so much better at Cheltenham that he is a big player, but he's a hard horse to be adamant about. And he might end up going off at a big price on the day.
Yeah.
And then if he does drift to like 33-1, you go, wow.
Couple of quid each. Wouldn't, right?
If he goes and wins, you go, well, he's won the best trial on the bridle. How did he go off at that price? Maybe he's one of those, but I find it hard to trust that form.
Okay. He's only a 6-year-old, and Johnny Charon gave him a brilliant ride. You'd have to think he'd ride him similarly, which is from off the pace really quietly.
Yeah.
So if you are thinking each way, yeah, he could be a player at a price like Rory is suggesting.
If you're getting 33s, I don't think you get that now.
I don't think he'll be a
drift. He could be a big drifter. Right, Ruby, there's a whole Rake and Mullins horses, Classical Dream, all these boys that were steering for launch.
Yeah, Classical obviously was 4th, 5th in last year's race, came back and won at Punchestown. Good run in Fairy House this year. We haven't seen him since. I saw him on the gallops. He's progressing. I haven't read an update from Willie, and I haven't asked about him. So,
what do you hear first? An update from him or reading about it? When do you hear first about these
probably
horses?
If I thought about it and asked him, but by the time tomorrow morning comes, I won't remember to ask him. So, no point even thinking I will. Sir Gerhard's obviously in over fences. Asterion Forlange, big ask, hasn't run since the Gold Cup last year behind the Plutar. Horton Color looked like he didn't get home in the Red Mills the other day. Sharjah, first try at 3 miles, 2.5 might suit him better. Saint Sam is too keen. Shaq and Pursuit, I couldn't see it. What else has he got? Keep flicking. That's
well, if you're going that far down, we'll forget. Let's get your selection then. Okay, Ruby, winner of the Quadfairs. Home by the lead, very nice. Rory?
Blazing Cal for me, but you know, if you're looking to back him, I'd want to see him in the parade ring.
I'd want to see him behaving.
I don't mind him behaving badly. I don't mind badly behaved horses. It's the quiet ones you've got to be slightly wary of. If he turns up and he's as quiet as a lamb, I'd be slightly worried about that. But you want to see him bouncing out of that. And also the fact that he's had, we talked about the possible bounce factor, the fact that he's had lots of niggling injuries means, you know, if you hear, oh, big race favourite misses Cheltenham in the next 2 weeks, you're kind of thinking it might be him.
Yeah, well, so, not on our money back. So
yeah, exactly. So there's no harm. And yeah. I think he ends up being he's not clear on form. But as Ruby says, the manner of his win.
The potential is there.
Yeah, the potential is there. The time figure wasn't terrific for that. But he sauntered through them, and he wasn't massively fancied on that. You know, there was no attempt to have a touch on him or anything like that. But you know, he was weak in the market. He
very weak. 5-1.
He'll have, I imagine, Philip Burns will ride him again. Can't claim.
Yeah.
Five, is it?
That's a five point. Or three. Yeah. Well, look. Blazing Cal, home by the lead in the Paddy Power Stairs. We move on to the Blue Ribbon.
Blue Ribboned.
Blue Ribboned, not Ribbon. This is the.
Why is it Ribboned?
I don't really know.
We could go down that rabbit hole, but we are.
You two spent longer in school than me. I thought you at least know the answer to that.
It's not hard to beat that one.
Wasn't the Blue Ribbon originally a competition between ocean liners?
We're not going to go down that rabbit hole, Rory. Right, we're going to talk about the Gold Cup.
If we were doing this online, producer Mark would Google it and put the answer on the screen for us.
Unfortunately, he's just sitting in the background giggling. Let's talk about the Gold Cup itself. Let's try and find a winner of this race. Right, Galloping Shot Ruby. He looks, so far, near flawless. The question mark going into the DRF was, would he show us what in Leopardstown that he would stay the 3 mile, 2 furlongs? Was it answered or partly answered?
Partly, because of the pace of the race. They didn't go really quick. Now, obviously, when you don't go quick, races do tend to build from further out, and that does become a stamina contest just in a different way. And Fury Road made him go. He got the better of Fury Road after the last fence, and you'd love the way he went through the line, how far Paul Townend had to go to pull him up. All the indications were there that he would stay. I don't think stamina is an issue, but he still has to go and do it for you to say he did. My opinion is he will. I think he's relaxed. He's a mature horse this year. He was good in the John Durkin. I thought he was very good again at Leopardstown at the Dublin Racing Festival. And even like the fence past the stands, if you look at it, it was number 8 or 7 or 8. Paul Townend went for a big jump on him and Gallop and absolutely pinged it. And then he went to the next fence and danced on the takeoff board. When you light him up now, he still switches himself back off. He's not all the time on and going, which he was last year. So to me now, he has the ideal profile for a Gold Cup horse. He had the pace to win over Shorter. He looks like he'll get further. Yeah, he ticks all the boxes.
He does, yeah. Had you or had Willie been working on the freshness angle? Or because we talked about sometimes horses just learn by themselves.
He did learn because Paul felt he had learned by the time he got to Fairy House last year. But he did catch us by surprise last year when he won his beginners. We didn't expect him to be as exuberant as he was. He wasn't exuberant as a novice. We didn't expect a novice hurdler. We didn't expect him to be exuberant as a novice chaser. But he was, and he has matured through his novice chase season, which you hope horses will do. He is 7 years of age. I don't see a negative. Do you, Rory?
Not really. No, and again, the big question has always been his stamina, but like you, I was more impressed with the way he saw that. I just the final 100 yards of the race and going through the line makes me think that stamina is not going to be the concern. The only concern I had on the day was I thought when he came back in, he looked like he'd had a really hard race.
Yeah,
he looked very tired, which he was entitled to be. I mean, I've got no problem with that. It's just a case of how quickly he's recovered from that. It is possible that a really hard race, despite the fact that he was going away at the line, despite the fact that he hit the line hard, that doesn't mean they've had an easy time of things. So my only concern would be, is he absolutely fully recovered from that? And he could just regress a little bit from it. But, you know, I mentioned this to standing next to Brendan Powell in the parade ring at the time, and he said there's no one better in the business than Willie Mullins at bringing them on. Run like that, you'll see them and think that's going to have to improve a bit next time to go and win.
And it does.
And in form terms, he doesn't really. In conditioning, he wants to come forward a little bit. And, you know, Willie is an absolute master at that. So although I'm concerned about it, I'm probably getting less concerned as time goes on, because I'm trying to find an alternative. And I'm
struggling.
The more you look for one to beat them, the more you realise that there are. You've got to overlook negatives in the others.
Okay, right. So all good with Galliman Deschamp. We haven't been talking a huge amount about Aplutar Ruby because we haven't seen him. Are we forgetting about him for the right reasons? It's hard to come back that far off winning a Gold Cup.
I don't know. Are we forgetting about him? Definitely not. Obviously, we've only saw him once, Haydock, and it was so bad it couldn't be true. He was due to run at Christmas. We know he knocked his joint. He didn't run. I think the noises are right about him. The vibes from the yard. I was in Punchestown yesterday. Henry had a winner. A horse won the novice or the maiden hurdle, and he had a couple of horses run well, and I thought his horses looked particularly well.
Okay.
Thought there was a gleam off them. The horse that won, particularly the horse that won the maiden hurdle, can't think of its name now. Rachel rode it in blue colours, but I thought it looked the picture. Not round, heavy like a show horse.
Yeah.
It looked lean and fit. Its skin on the horse, it looked like an otter to look at him. I think his horses do look particularly well. And
the 1-2 in that graded hurdle at Clonmel during the week as well, didn't they?
I'd say they're just starting to. Well, they haven't been out of form. They maybe haven't been as hot as they have been at other times of the year. And I have just a feeling these horses, Henry's, are starting to come into really good form.
Yes, I mean, and in fairness, you look back at the last few festivals, and that's been the case as well.
Yeah.
It's very easy to look at the form book, or look at the trainer's record from the turn of the year, and say, "Oh, what Henry de Bromhead's not getting many winners, is he?" And yet he produces tremendous results at the festival, given the ammunition that he has. His record at the festival, despite not being in such good form as either Gordon or Willie coming into the festival, shows that he's an absolute master at just getting them right at the right time.
I just thought 3 weeks out, looking at the horses yesterday, I thought, poof. He's getting it
might
right.
Be back in a few of those in the next couple of weeks.
Well, yeah.
How do you rate last year's Gold Cup in terms of the form versus looking ahead to this one?
I thought it was an outstanding performance.
Yeah.
There's no way you can dodge around that. Pace wasn't frantic. He sat behind a strongly run race. He lets the previous winner go down the hill and kick off the bend. Rachel Blackmore got the split going to the second last. But we were talking about Gallop and the Sham from the last home at Leopardstown. A Plutar from the last home in last year's Gold Cup. Was brilliant.
That's something that very few horses can do, and he's shown more than once when he's right. He's very, very good from the second last fence to the line at Cheltenham. You know, again, you stop that race on the run for home and you think this is a bunch finish.
Yeah.
It's going to be really exciting, but maybe not a great Gold Cup. And then you actually see the result and you're stunned by how far he's gone that way.
What happened at Haydock then, since in the Bedford Chase when he bombed out, something definitely wrong. The automatic conclusion, a lot of people will go, well, the Gold Cup was so good that it's left a mark. Or is it too far out?
Too far out, but I watched a couple of Henry's horses run in the UK early before Christmas.
And they were just as bad, really, weren't they?
Yeah. Two or three of them ran shocking. There was one ran in Sandown in the novice hurdle.
Oh, yes. Yeah, in the
Tallworth, was it? Yeah. Ran shocking. A Plutar and something else ran. Trying to think of the races.
None of them finished.
No.
Okay.
Envoy Allen, the King George.
Yes.
Of course, yeah.
Just like
off the back of one of his good runs as well.
Just ran unbelievably bad. So to me, there was a how I couldn't tell you, but there was just too many of them with that should have or could have run decent races that bombed completely out. So I don't know what it was.
So positive noises about the Henry de Bromhead Yard, and Plutar obviously falls into that category. Let's talk about a couple others from Willie Statler, Capitano. Capitano, what did you make of his reappearance last weekend?
He ran well, jumped a bit high, a bit exuberant. It was a good first run. Do I honestly? I think he's an each way outsider that could run well in a Gold Cup.
Yeah.
I don't see him as a Gold Cup winner. But look, I'd say lesser horses have won Gold Cups.
Yeah.
That would have been a very tough race for him to win. To give context, he was giving weight away. It was his first one. Yeah.
Nine-time penalty is a massive penalty to be given away.
Yeah, and it was a trip short.
I don't disagree with the 9-pound penalty. No. I think for a Grade One winner the previous year. In Grade Two races, if you're going to encourage the Grade One horses to run in Grade One races, they should have 10 and 11 run penalties in Grade Twos.
Yeah. Statler,
triple suit him, ran well in a slowly run Irish Gold Cup, probably flattered to be second. Fury Road doesn't run all the way across the track. Mm. He'd have finished second. Statler finishes third. Are you talking differently then?
In a race run at a solid gallop throughout, you'd fancy him to beat Fury Road every time.
Yeah, probably would. Yeah.
Okay. So in a gold cup with dig in the grind, he doesn't need soft grind, but he needs a stamina test, and if it looks like it's going to be a race run at an end to end gallop, which isn't always the case in the Gold Cup, then that would suit him and he would look a solid each way player.
I don't know what it is about the Bartlett colours, but I always think they need a trip. Whenever I say I don't know what it is, Ruby, I have you here on the notes.
Simon said the one the
actor. most of them, not all of them. After it says here in my notes, you tipped up Noble Yates at 66-1 on the road to Cheltenham.
Yeah, it was a good bet at the time.
It's looking very good now. What do you rate his chances?
Do I think he'll win the Gold Cup? I probably don't. I think he could be placed. He wasn't knocked about in the Cotswold Chase. It was used as a prep for him, and he came home well behind the High Senior. I think the High Senior can run well in the Gold Cup. I think Noble Yates will run really well. Do I see them? I think they need the race. Both the High Senior, Statler, Noble Yates, those three in particular, need this race turned into a marathon.
Yeah,
if they're going to get involved.
But Gold Cups can do that, can't they?
They can, but it can go both ways, and it depends what gets on the front.
Yeah, and ideally, most of those horses who need it. To turn into a marathon, want to be doing that themselves, don't they? They want to get themselves into a rhythm early on. You can do a native river, either make the running or sit right on the pace and keep pressing it.
High Senior probably is the one that could do that.
He could do that, yeah.
I don't think Noble Yates or Statler
have
looked like the horses that can do a native river on it.
Statler's the kind of horse who would be making a lot of ground from the second last, I would say, without looking like winning. Unless it turns into one of those races where they are really tired later on, in which case he could come all the way through. Ahoy Senor could, we know how good he can be, and if he gets it right, then he could shake them all up. But even in the Cotswold Chase, he made mistakes, he did things wrong, and then he's managed to sort of scramble a win out of it. He needs to do what he's been doing in the entry for the last two seasons in the Gold Cup, and I'm not sure.
Rare you get horses who can do entry form to Cheltenham.
Even looking at the entries, Rory, I don't see the horse. Like, no Sounds Rushing and pushed him in the Cotswold Chase. I don't know whether they do that again with Sounds Rushing because he didn't get home. I think they'd have to change tactic a little bit. I don't see the horse that's going to push a High Senior early enough and from far enough out.
Yeah, he needs to jump the first two or three fences and get in a rhythm and get on the front end. Whereas a couple of times this season, he's been so awkward early on that he's not been able to take that really prominent position. If he does in a Gold Cup and gets into a rhythm before they've jumped four or five fences, then he's a massive danger.
Yeah,
but it's quite a big if on what he's done this season. But you can argue on what he's shown in the spring every year. He looks a different horse. His jumping looks different. He jumped brilliantly at the entry over fences last season. He jumped brilliantly over hurdles the previous year. Whether he's a horse who just needs a lot of getting ready in terms of his jumping technique, I don't know.
Okay, couple more to talk about, Rory. Brave Man's Game, Conflated, chances?
I wasn't a fan of Conflated last year. Obviously, he went to Ryanair after winning the Irish Gold Cup. He's become a more reliable horse this time around. You know, he was a horse you wouldn't have backed in any kind of race before. He came up with that sort of shock win in last year's Irish Gold Cup. But he's been better since. He would have been placed in the Ryanair but for falling late last year. And he's looked okay this season. I think he's very well suited by small field races at Leopardstown, where he can actually use sort of mid-race speed That, you know, the tactical edge he has there is a 2.5 mile speed mid race, and he does see the 3 miles out. Don't think he'd say 3.25 at Cheltenham, and I don't think he'd be able to inject his speed into the race at any stage either. So I don't see him as a player.
Pass. Brave man's game.
Brave man's game. Now he's a tough one because I would have found him very easy to rule out, but for the King George run, and it's very easy also to say, yeah, King George winner, impressive King George winner, going for the Gold Cup. We've seen so many of them fall by the wayside that it's easy to rule them out on that. But he seems to have achieved a lot more in the King George, despite not necessarily having the run of the race. I mean, he covered a lot of ground out wide. He seemed to beat them for stamina and for jumping, and he just seemed to take a step forward, which I wasn't expecting, because he's been tremendously consistent throughout his career, and that's been his issue. He looks really good early on. He does nothing wrong, and you start to think he's a superstar. And you look at his run in the Charlie Hall, for example, and say, that's not Gold Cup form, even though everyone raved about it on the telly at the time. The King George suddenly looks slightly different performance, but on balance, I'd be surprised if he's doing the same thing at Cheltenham. I'd like to see it. I'd like Paul Nicholls to be able to come forward with a Gold Cup horse again, because he's gone a bit shy on running his best horses at Cheltenham, because he gets such good results from them at the entry, where the races are slightly easier won.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I think if he stays, he's a massive chance.
Will he stay?
He looked a stayer at Kempton. Now, again,
he did.
It's Kempton, and it's a different kind of track. But I was surprised with the stamina that he showed. He was really strong at the finish,
and he's,
even though he's gone wide all the way through the race.
And he's arguably the best jumper in the race.
Yeah.
And that helps. Yeah. One more to mention, Ruby Hewick. Of course, you can check out on Paddy Power Racing YouTube, a brilliant documentary, charting his path from the American Grand National, the big Gold Cup trial, as we know. Hewick for the Shark. Ruby, any chance?
I thought he'd be too slow to win the Galway Plate. He won that. I thought he'd too much weight to win the Kerry National. He was going to win that. Yeah. Yep. And he unseated at the last. Hewick is just going in one direction, and long may it continue for Hewick and the Shark.
It would be great, wouldn't it? It would be great if he gets involved. Okay, decision time. Rory, your one. I've been asked for your 1-2-3 in the Gold Cup.
Oh,
he's not just
Lordy.
The winner. Can we give the tricast, please?
Yes, for the tricast.
You love a tricast. Oh, checks notes. Gallop and the Champ.
I don't think I wrote that one down. I'm coming round to Gallop and Deschamps, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll throw a Hoy Senor in there, even though he's done my head in this year. I said at the start of the season, I don't care if he's beaten first time out, second time out. It's the spring you want to back him. He still didn't entirely convince me in the Cotswold Chase despite winning that, but I just feel he still is the one who has that mercurial performance in him. So I'll put him in there in the hope that he does a Coney Gree. And Gallop and Deschamps for second. Statler running through them for three.
Excellent. Ruby?
Galloping, a Plutar, Brave Man's Game.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. That is your 1-2-3 from the two lads, Ahoy Senor and Galloping Deschamps, the selections in the Gold Cup. That's it. We'll be back next week. Don't forget, this is obviously Cheltenham preview season. The lads' selections will be having a nice little few enhances. They've gone for a few favourites this week as well, which is great. So check out the Paddy Power website, the Cheltenham section for those. As ever, subscribe to the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel and like it. And comment for a chance to win a question. Next week, we're going to look at
which
some of the...
What should you do first? You like
you
it first, comment
can,
first,
you
or subscribe
can,
first?
I think you can do... It doesn't really matter. It's right. There's no chicken and egg here. I think you can do all three at the same time if you want. Next week, we'll be looking ahead to some of the races we haven't covered. It's our last episode. Ruby's off, so we're going to bring in a special guest. Where are you going next week, Ruby? Not one of these jolly ups for you.
Just not around people.
Another one of these jolly ups for Ruby was half ass. If you have any questions for Rory and our special guest next week, usual comment on the channel or indeed FTHM@paddypower.com. But until then, have a great week. We will see you next week. FTHM as well, of course, podcast this week for all the racing action of the weekend. Watch out for this.
Who's bobbing clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Fahim maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh. Fahim's a champion.